Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a vice president and branch leader with Fidelity Investments. And with me today is Tony Zhang, chief market strategist of Options Play. Tony is a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, I want to say again, welcome. It's great to be back with you today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Thank you for having me back. We have a lot to talk about here after NVIDIA's earnings last night.
I'm looking forward to it. Today is Thursday, August 29th. And of course, as Tony mentioned, we have more economic and earnings numbers that came in this week. Tony, I won't belabor the point. Let's get right to it. I think we're all very much interested to hear what your macroeconomic views are on the market. So tell us, what are you observing?
Yeah, I would say this week, you know, all eyes were on NVIDIA earnings. NVIDIA itself, you know, is in the spotlight because it's contributed to more than one third of the gains of the NASDAQ 100 index over the last year or so. And, you know, is a primary driver of market direction because the speed at which, or the capital expenditure that technology companies continue to spend on AI-related infrastructure has been a main driver of equity valuations and equity prices. So there was a lot of eyeballs looking at the earnings report, dissecting the earnings report today. You also had GDP come out here, but the earnings report for NVIDIA last night came in better than expected in terms of both top and bottom line. And what this really speaks to the fact that demand for AI-related hardware remains incredibly strong. However, when you look at the outlook that they gave for Q3 and their concerns around their next generation of chips, there was a little bit of a mixed picture here. The guidance came in a little bit on the lower end of the range from analysts, and this is why the stock is down, you know, after the close yesterday, around 7%. You know, it's pared back some of those losses here right now. It's down just shy of 4% here. So overall, I would say the reaction here to that news event has been overly positive for equities as a whole, slightly negative for NVIDIA itself because of some of the concerns around supply chain issues on their next generation of chips. But the reaction overall to the broader market has actually been quite positive, you know, because it really speaks to the fact that demand for AI and AI-related hardware remains incredibly robust. You also had GDP numbers come out this morning that surprised to the upside on the back of strong consumer spending. And that's really kind of what's been driving the markets here over the past couple of weeks has been the strength of the U.S. consumer. So if you look at price action here on the S&P 500, we're right now back within spitting distance of all-time highs. You know, we could very much see this breakout to new all-time highs on the S&P. If you look at the NASDAQ 100 using the QQQ ETF, we need to see this break above 485 to make another crack at all-time highs. And that very much seems like we're kind of on our way there, back to those 503 all-time highs on the Qs. So, you know, with NVIDIA earnings and GDP out of the way, it really clears the decks a little bit going into Labor Day weekend. And I think the focus now really turns back to employment. Employment is what drove the volatility at the beginning of the month. Next week, we have a lot of employment data coming out on the labor markets. And that's really the big risk that I see here with the equity rally that as we reach these all-time highs is the cooling of the labor market. We have seen the Fed, the regional Fed surveys show a further cooling of the labor market since we had that July reading at the beginning of the month. The question is whether or not the August reading will also show some softness here as well. And if there is, how much softness? That is the big risk. That is the big macro picture, the big macroeconomic event that we need to start paying attention to next week.
Tony, I noticed that in your synopsis here, you showed us charts, both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. Can you speak to the overlap when you think about those indices? You know, I recall at one point there were about 79 stocks, and of course, this number varies over time, of the NASDAQ 100 that were also showing up as names in the S&P 500. Can you kind of share why you kind of picked out this observation to look at the NASDAQ 100 as well? And, why is that significant, given the overlap?
Yeah, and if you look at over the past 20 years or so, the NASDAQ 100 has beat the S&P 500 something like 17 out of 20 years. So generally speaking, you tend to see NASDAQ outperform the S&P, and the fact that the NASDAQ has underperformed the S&P on this recent rally after the July volatility is something that is worth noting. And you mentioned overlap, a good amount of overlap between the S&P and the NASDAQ, but I think what should be looking at is where there's a lack of overlap. And if you look at the NASDAQ 100, you're talking about the 100 largest non-financial stocks listed on the NASDAQ 100. So the big difference between the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 is the fact that the NASDAQ is far more concentrated in nature. So the top seven stocks in the NASDAQ account for nearly 50% of the weight of the S&P 500. And also it's lacking financial stocks. And financials has actually been performing quite well here on this rally here over the past 3 weeks or so. And that's really what's powered the S&P 500 higher here rather than in the S and the NASDAQ 100 lagging behind. Technology stocks and semiconductor stocks have really been a drag here on the NASDAQ 100. What's been powering the NASDAQ 100 for the past few years is now starting to be a drag. And this is something to be aware of as we look forward as to whether or not the valuations of some of these semiconductor stocks is becoming an issue here for investors, especially in the long run, given just the fact that they seem incredibly stretched.
Thank you. I appreciate that insight, Tony. So I do understand today you've got two trade ideas for us. So let's get started. What's the first trade idea you'd like to share with us to take opportunity in the market that as you see it?
Yeah, the first one I want to take a look at is Autodesk. And this is because, as we look at NVIDIA earnings last night, what's still incredibly clear is the fact that demand for AI is incredibly strong and robust. However, I do think investors are rethinking just exactly which specific AI plays are worth putting their money behind. You have a lot of big capital expenditure right now in some of these big tech names, where the picture as far as how they're going to generate revenue, when they're going to generate revenue, and how much revenue they're going to generate on the back of that is very much unclear. And then you have a set of AI stocks such as Autodesk, Adobe. These are AI-related stocks that have an AI product and generating subscriptions from it today. And I think those are the ones that I think we should really pay attention to, which is why I think Autodesk, especially if you look at the price action today on the back of NVIDIA earnings yesterday, these are the types of stocks that are powering higher in the AI space while semiconductors are actually lagging behind. So if you look at Autodesk, we've seen an incredible amount of strength here on the stock over the past couple of months, especially when you think about the fact that their AI enhanced tools are continuing to gain traction here from users. And Autodesk reports earnings tomorrow. And this is really the potential upside that I see with some of the AI-related stocks that are monetizing their products today, not looking at some, two, three, four quarters down the line before they can generate some revenue from that. So if you look at a chart here for Autodesk, we recently broke out above that 250, 255 resistance level. And if you look at the fact that it's outperformed the S&P over the last 2 months with this breakout, and momentum remains incredibly positive here. That's really the strong signal that I like to see going into an earnings event that leads me to believe that there's a higher likelihood that Autodesk will beat on earnings and continue moving higher from here. And then if you look at the business here, it's trading at 31 times forward earnings, which is on the high end of the software industry. However, if you look at the growth metrics, it is outpacing the industry in terms of revenue growth. You're looking at about 11% expected revenue growth versus only about 8% for the software industry. And that to some degree justifies the higher valuation. But you also have to put a little bit of premium on the fact that it is an AI-related play. And that's why I think it's the 31 times forward earnings is justified, especially if it can continue to meet investors' expectations here for earnings. And I think going into the earnings event and getting a bit of a read from NVIDIA yesterday gives us a bit more confidence that Autodesk will likely beat earnings and continue moving higher. So the trade structure that I want to use to play this is a vertical spread, and I'm purposely going out to the September expiration, so less than a month from expiration here, and buying the 257.5, 275 call vertical. Earlier today, you can pay about $7 for that debit spread. And what that means is that you're risking only $700 per trade on this specific, per contract on this specific trade. And this will give you the risk to reward ratio of about 1.5 to 1 if Autodesk gets up to above 275 by that expiration date. 275 is the upper strike of the vertical spread here. And the rule of thumb here is to try to capture the upside with earnings in a short amount of time using a structure like this, which is only going to help you reduce the amount of risk that you take with a bullish exposure using options.
So Tony, looking at this, you've got this trade set out for about 3 weeks. Is this a set it or forget it trade, or is there a situation where you would monitor and close this position early?
That's a really great question. Whenever you're trading a debit vertical spread or any trade that's a debit, you know, whether it's a long call, long put, a debit spread, or you know, think about like a butterfly that costs you a debit to get into the trade. Generally speaking, any of those types of trades are not set and forget trades. These are trades that you have to active pretty ma pretty you have to manage them pretty actively. So here I'm paying about $7 per share or $700 per contract for this debit spread. Now, this is a binary event trade, meaning by tomorrow morning we'll have a read on Autodesk's earnings, and I expect that I'll be likely closing out this trade potentially before the end of this week, depending on where earnings end up. But the general rule of thumb that we have here is that even if the stock doesn't move very much on earnings and maybe we get a bit of a drift afterwards, you want to cut your losses if you lose 50% of the premium that you pay. So we're paying $7 here. If at any point you lose about half of that, which is $3.50, it's time to consider cutting your losses and getting out. On the flip side, if we reach that 275 mark here, which is the upper strike price of my debit spread, that's a good indication that we're near our target price, and that's a good indication to start taking profits. But it's definitely not the type of trade that you set and forget. You definitely want to manage this fairly actively, especially going into earnings.
That's very helpful, Tony. Thank you. So let's move on to your second trade of the day. What else are you considering to find opportunity this week?
Yeah, I want to take a look at the hotel industry. And arguably, you know, after today's price action, we're seeing a little bit of a shift here, especially on the GDP numbers showing that consumer spending has been incredibly strong. But overall, we continue to see that the hotel industry is facing some headwinds, especially in the consumer spending space, where travel spending has started to slow down a little bit. We see it in the inflation data as well. So Marriott has already started to issue some softer guidance for the second half of this year, expecting that travel demand won't be as strong as it was at the end of last year. And if you look at a chart here for Marriott, we broke below that 230 support here recently, with underperforming the S&P 500 in conjunction with that. So when you have negative, when you have momentum turning negative, you have a stock breaking below support levels while it's underperforming the S&P 500, those are some of the negative cues that we start to see of a stock that's starting to exhibit what we could consider classic bullish to bearish trend reversal here. So the target price that I have here to the downside, the initial target price, is the start of the recent rally, which is around 213 or so. But I have extended targets all the way down to about 180 to the downside for Marriott. So there's a fair amount of room that this could potentially run to the downside if we start to see some continued slowdown in consumer spending, especially in the travel space. And if you look at the valuations here for Marriott, that's really what I think is more concerning. It's trading at about 24 times forward earnings, which is a substantial premium to the industry average of only 18 times. You're talking about a 33% premium in terms of valuation to the industry. Yet, if you look at growth expectations, it actually is far below industry expectations or industry averages. EPS growth for Marriott's only expected to be growing at about 6% versus about 18% average for the industry. You know, revenue growth and margins largely are in line for Marriott, but the fact that it trades at such a heavy premium relative to the industry, yet growth is actually expected to be subpar relative to the industry. That's really the disconnect that I see here with Marriott and the fundamentals. And when you have a technical chart that's starting to break down, you have a valuation picture that looks somewhat overvalued here. This is really where I think the risk to reward, especially as we rally back to this major resistance level, favors adding some bearish exposure at this current moment. So the trade charts that I want to use here for Marriott is very similar to the one that I'm using on Autodesk, but I'm taking a bearish view here. I'm going out to the October expiration and I'm buying the 230-210 put vertical. What I'm doing here is I'm buying the 230 puts, but I'm also at the same time going to sell the 210 puts against that. And by selling those 210 puts, I'm going to be able to collect some premium and reduce the overall cost of this trade down to about $4.85 per share or $485 per contract. And that's the total risk for this trade, $485 per contract. And this is the type of trade that's going to give me more than a 3-to-1 risk to reward ratio. If Marriott starts to decline by that October expiration and it's below that lower strike price of 210, I'm looking at almost over $1,500 in potential profits off of my investment of $485 if Marriott's below 210 by expiration. So the risk reward here looks incredibly favorable, and that would put Marriott in a much more reasonable valuation range if it's trading back to that 210 level, which is why I chose those specific strike prices.
Thank you for sharing this trade, Tony. So my question, I think, is similar. In the last trade, you protected your potential losses to just the capital outlay to purchase the spread and this bear spread. I'm curious to know, how would you manage this trade over the course of the month and a half till October?
Yeah, great question. And the answer is the same. Because this is a debit trade structure, you generally want to manage this well before expiration. So the rule of thumb, as before, is that if you lose more than 50% of the premium that you pay, you definitely want to consider cutting your losses and moving on. So if we're paying about $4.85 for this debit spread, once you lose about $2.40 or so on a debit spread like this, chances are the trade is not going to work out. At least certainly not in the time frame that you're expecting it to. So it's better to save that additional $2.40 that you have left on the trade potentially for the next trade, or perhaps adjusting the timing on your trade by maybe buying a longer dated option and taking the premium that you save from this particular trade and applying it to the next trade. So you definitely want to manage these prior to expiration. And the flip side, if it does reach that 210 level here, the lower strike price on the debit spread, that's also a good indication of when it might be time to start taking profits on this trade. Now, like I said, I have extended targets all the way down to about 180 here to the downside. So if we do get to that 210 strike, I'm likely going to take profits on this debit spread and perhaps roll it into a new debit spread where I'm going to remove the strike prices further down, buy myself some a little bit more time. And this way I can continue to not only take exposure down to 210, but potentially all the way down to 180 if it does get all the way down there, because that's really truly where I think the true fair value of where Marriott should be at this moment.
That's really helpful in how you tie that into your thesis. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate your insight there. So we've reached the time where we save time in our conversation each week to talk about what some trades look like in the past and really see how they played out. I really enjoy this because it's real life. We get a chance to see what's happened. And so I understand you're looking back at a trade today with Google. Can you tell us how that trade is performing?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I want to look at this because this is actually one of the trade structures that you can potentially set and forget to some degree where you're selling a cash secured put. Because generally speaking, when you're selling a cash secured put, you either want the puts to expire worthless or you want the puts put to you. So here I sold the September 6th. This was from a few weeks ago. This was right after the volatility that we saw 3 weeks ago. We sold the September 6th 155 puts on Alphabet. At that time, we collected about $2.97, just shy of $3. Now, this put is now trading at just 20 cents. Now, from my perspective, you can simply try to let this expire worthless. You only have about a week left to go. It's likely going to get there. However, we're not trading too far off of that 155 level, especially if we do see some additional volatility. We have labor data coming out next week. That could contribute to some volatility, just like it did at the beginning of the month. So I advocate to simply close out this trade, as especially since the outlook of the stock itself has also changed a little bit. The technicals have turned a little bit more bearish. It has not recovered the way the rest of the market has recovered, and that's not a particularly good sign going into what could be a volatile week next week with the labor market data. So that's why I am advocating in this particular case to simply buy back the puts for about 20 cents. You're making the vast majority of the potential profits on this trade, about 95 of your maximum profit potential on this particular trade. So it's a good result, but I think it's a good time to manage this trade about a week out before expiration.
Thank you so much for sharing that example. I noticed a trend in our conversation today. It's all about managing, the trades. I want to ask you, how often do you assess your investment thesis, to determine is it still valid when you're thinking through how I'm managing the trades?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And generally speaking, I would say your investment thesis won't change too often unless the stock either has some type of information that has come out that has changed your overall thesis. We do have some antitrust news that have come out of Alphabet, which is contributing to some of the change in thesis. The other thing that could potentially change the thesis is the stock breaking above or below some important technical levels that maybe invalidate a bullish or bearish view on the underlying stock. And that is also the case that we've seen here in Alphabet. The fact that it hasn't managed to clear back above some major resistance levels is a concern here right now. Overall, I would say if you don't have a catalyst such as some type of an important news event that has come out, or it hasn't broken out above a major support and resistance level, I would say maybe on a weekly basis you should review the open trades that you have and just take a look at the charts, the fundamentals, and news, and see if there's anything that it might have contributing to changing your overall view on the trade.
That's great. That's helpful. Thank you. So before we wrap up today's conversation, Tony, can you give us an idea of what's on our agenda for next week?
Yeah, so despite a shortened week next week with Labor Day, we do have a pretty action-packed economic calendar next week. You have PMI data coming out at the beginning of the week. You have JOLTS data, labor data coming out in the middle of the week. You have jobless claims that's going to give us a good read into kind of how the labor market is shaping. But I think the big announcement next week is going to be non-farm payrolls on Friday and the unemployment rate. That's going to give us a true reading as far as where the labor market was in August, because that's going to be a big contributing factor to understanding how consumers will continue to spend into the rest of this year. We saw an incredible amount of volatility on the July job numbers. We've seen job numbers, the economic data in terms of labor come in a little softer than expected for August. So we'll see if that does come through in the August data, because that can contribute to some volatility, and I do see that as a risk here for the equity markets back at all-time highs.
Okay, that does sound fascinating. We will stay tuned. Thank you so much, Tony. This does bring us to a close, and I want to first thank all of our viewers for tuning in again today. Tony, thank you again for bringing us your thoughts and trade ideas.
Thank you so much, Roberta, and I hope you have a great Labor Day.
Thank you so much. For all of our viewers, if you are interested in further details specific to Tony's trade ideas that he shared with us today, please join us in our midday market briefing, which will be held tomorrow. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. Also, if you're looking for more insights, or if you missed today's live show, you can sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive highlights of the trades discussed as well. You can do that at fidelity.com/Active Investor Weekly. We'll see you next week on another episode of In the Money. Take care.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.
Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.